beauty, trickery, suffering, relationship, right? So we'll do a diagram first of the least relationship possible. And to make the least diagram, we put down a dot, don't we? Can you see that red dot? Or would you like a black dot? Drawn with a dried up pen that won't draw. I'll use the red dot. And then redness will symbolize the fact that the primary dot is energy. Red equals energy. Phonetically, the word red means a vibratory process of life creating a division. Now here, where I haven't done a dot, all round it, extending to infinity, there is no dot. And there's a relation between no dot and the dot. Is that clear? And that's the least relation we can talk about. The relation of infinity to finity. The relation of the unlimited to the limited. The unlimited space is really unlimited sentient power. And the dot is a point of concentration of that power, by that power, for that power. And when it puts the dot down there, that is its first beautiful gesture of self-trickery. Now, trick is a little form of trok. Trok, tarok, Torah, law. Cosmic law is called Torah or Rota or Tarok because it repeats eternally. Only the eternally repetitious can be eternally true. To be true, it must repeat forever. So there must be a relationship forever between infinite consciousness and the content of that consciousness, which is precipitated by the consciousness for the consciousness. And that dot is the first reference point and the first possibility of the relation. Without the dot, there is an extended field of sentient power with no content. Nothing is being done. There is an infinite potential and no content. Think about that very carefully. Infinite sentient power doing nothing. Is it any use? Is it any profit to itself? Is there a profit in a power that does nothing, gains nothing, posits nothing, and is just an awareness of nothing? Is there any profit? Can there be? You answer, Trevor.
No.
No. Does anybody disagree with that?
What do you mean by profit?
Profit. Profit means a rational fittingness with a purpose. You must have a purpose, you must define it, and you must define the means to its realization. Now, if your definition of the goal is matched by the means to attain it, that is profit. Profit. And that fit and fakiri to make, to do. And the pro for and pyra reason. When you define a goal, the goal you define conditions your aims and your sub aims, your purposes to get it. The means is going to be realized in the end. And the realized end is the profit. Right? Now, you can spell it with a PH in the middle as well. Because unless you prophesy with a PH, you do not set up a goal, do you? So we say, no prophecy, no Messiah. If some men called prophets had not seen that a sacrificial figure was an essential to teach people how to take suffering, if they had not prophesied, there'd be no looking forward. If there were no looking forward, there could not be the attainment of a goal that hadn't been defined. Now, define and divine are the same word. You are divine insofar as you can define your goal and the means to it and then take the steps to realize it. I'm Alpha, that means infinite extended eidetic conscious field, and Omega, the big O, the realized goal. Now, beauty means that which is attained with ease, absolute ease. It's another word for economy. Look at the water in the French word for beauty. Look at the O, look at the E-A-U. To flow like water, like the Tao is saying, in with the whirl, out with the swirl. You adjust to the realities like water adjusts to rocks. Doesn't it wear the rock down and defeat it ultimately? By ever so gentle rubbings, aren't the rocks reduced to sand and carted away into the sea? So there's a continuous cycle. The sand is represented by that dot. The dot is polluted there and then ground to bits, made into a lot of little dots. So we'll surround that with some other dots. We'll put 6 dots because that's geometrically correct to do. Now, the mills of God grind slowly. They grind exceeding small. What is meant is that when you posit a dot, that dot on its own is a possible seed of other dots. Once you got the idea of a dot, a location, then you can have the idea of a plurality of dots. And when you have a plurality of dots, then you have something you didn't have with only one dot. Whereas the relation of infinity to the dot is simple, the relation of several dots to each other is not so, because then we can extend the dot and make, through passing through the dot, a line connecting to another dot. So we can say, there is a triangle, and there is another triangle. And who'd have thought, putting the dots down, that we'd arrive at the Israeli flag? And that means a triad of power, form, function in two worlds. The one that points upwards is the spiritual world, the one that points downwards is the physical world. And we live in two worlds, a world of consciousness and a world of physicality, constituting the object of consciousness. We all have physical bodies, they're objects. And we all have those physical bodies within the field of consciousness. Now, it is beautiful when we can do a thing easily. If you go to the ballet and you see a girl dancing with great grace, floating about, either on the points or heels, as long as it's done with ease, with efficiency, with smoothness, you say beauty. Because the model of beauty is water. Water means flexibility. It means flow, it means ease, it means beauty. It means be a house of E-A-U, water, crucified suffering. I'll write that word for you. One house, one zone of water, one crucifixion, and one affirmation. Now, we can't have beauty unless we affirm the crossings of the waves of the water in the house. I'm going to surround this diagram here. The earliest form of the letter B, quite simply, is a circle, which represents a sphere. When a sphere spins, it flattens and becomes a circle. The solar system is flattened into a plane because it rotates. The same with the spiral nebulae you see in the sky. Now, we're talking about trickery and beauty, sacrifice, suffering, and we're examining the relation between them. We say that unless you can affirm, that's why, unless you can say yes to it, you cannot establish it. Establishment of anything whatever, every idea, every feeling, every active of the will, unless it is posited, it cannot be established. So there must be a YT, Himalayan Yeti. There must be an affirmation of a cross. And the cross symbol is an active force striking a passive force. The vertical symbolizes the active and the horizontal the passive. And unless that relation exists, then there is no establishment of a cosmos. Now, let's look at the EAU. The me is a house, which is a sphere. E is life, A is action, U is drive. A is action of affection. So the word is saying life, affection, drive. A house, a spherical container, which is our being. You know, we all start life as an egg, an ovum carried in the body of a woman, and this is impregnated with a sperm, a more condensed, more formulated being. The two relate together. And the life force has felt itself to be and then driven. Life has felt itself to be and then driven itself within itself to become itself, to realize itself, and ultimately attain absolute free, easy self-expression of itself to itself. We're all working to express ourselves to ourselves. The marvelous dancer or Olympic gamester does it to express himself in order to become, by feedback, aware of himself. If you do a terrific pole jump, everybody applauds, and you know that you are you because the applause is for you. And you can see an Olympic gamester when there's a great burst of applause, when he does something brilliant, and you can see him swell a bit. He's done it right. And if he takes a leap and does the splits and lands on the wrong leg, he knows there's a mark gun off there, and it's not 10, it's not 9.5, it's 5.6. And he feels smaller, and he literally shrinks. He's on the way to death. If he keeps repeating, he will die. I remember a particular gamester who, on seeing an ego do a long jump, gave up trying. But it was a very, very long, long jump. So although he was a long jumper, he gave up. He shrank. His long jumping potential diminished. He might have done the opposite. He might have said, if he can jump that far, I can jump twice that far. If I do twice the practice and have twice the intelligence and twice the better coach and twice the better food and vitamins and so on.
He didn't invite himself.
What?
He didn't invite himself to that.
No, he did not. He invited himself to failure and disappeared. Probably many of you remember that particular case. But we must remember that unless we have that B, which is a sphere, we can't have this water controlled. And if it is not controlled, it is chaos. Control means calm with troll, Torah, linkage. It means binding up and then flowing within a boundary. I'll draw you an example of water flowing at random. Like this. This is random water. Now, tell me, do you like that, or do you prefer this kind of water? Which do you find the more interesting? This one. Why? Well, it's got the point in it there, which would pin it totally, and having created it, it's dodged the final committal and got out. And we think that's terribly clever. We're always courting disaster. You know, everybody that ever got married knows that. The ones who didn't get married, they were not finally committed, they didn't quite make the grade, they did not do what is necessary for beauty. That. You can't have beauty unless you commit yourself to the ultimate degree of restraint within the situation into which you enter and affirm that restraint. That restraint is educational. That's right, the word restraint. The re, of course, is a repetition. And here is the strain. Spirit rotating, Torah, A-I-N. That means an observer. There's an I, observing. If you don't rotate, you cannot become an I. If you don't repeat, you cannot become an I. You must tell yourself over and over again, I am such and such a being. I am power, I am form, I am function. And you must say, what kind of power? Weak power, strong power, mediocre power? And you must say, what form? Triangular, square, hexagonal? And you must say, what function? If you can say the power, the form, and the function, and repeat it, you establish yourself as a being of power, form, function. But that's the definition of God. God is infinite power, form, function. And a divine being that is not infinite, but is created and finite, self-realized, is called a little God, because he makes himself as a little circle within the big circle, by power, by formation, by functioning. Now, in all those diagrams, there's something. There's our dot again. When we look at that dot and remember this infinity of light beyond it, we see that where the infinity meets the edge of the dot, there is an interface. And what we're going to talk about to explain beauty and trickery, remember trickery is little trickery. Trick is big law, cosmic law. Trick is a little application of a little knowledge of that law. I was teaching Greta a dirty trick the other day. Was I, Greta? How to handle certain colours in a certain way to produce a certain effect. It's a trick. And she said, oh, we're not supposed to use tricks. And we are. But we're supposed to understand that the trick is a little bit of trock, is a little bit of cosmic law. And the people that can't see the trick are the ones that pay to see Paul Daniels. The tricker. Trickster is one of the oldest figures of mythology and corresponds with Mercury, Hermes, Tecute, Messiah. Why is the Messiah a trickster? Because he spoke to the people in parables and said that hearing they might not understand, lest they repent from their sins and be saved. If they saw the trick, they would repent. Repent means rethink. Magicians don't like talking and doing tricks in front of babies, because babies are not concerned with the magician's best trick, which is misdirection of attention. I'm going to shift a ball from one pocket to the other with my left hand, so I put my right hand up there and admire it. The adult audience follows the director. The baby is watching the hand. So good stage magicians won't have baby on front row, because he said, oh, mister, you've got it in your left pocket. Now, this is the most important concept we can have. Infinity, by positing a finite, limited zone, makes an interface. I'm going to enlarge that interface a bit. I'll draw that dot as a circle. That's economic. Because the dot literally is nothing but a psychological intention. It's an inner tension. It is not a thing. It is not matter. It is an intention within the field. Right. Now the interface is this periphery here. I'm going to abstract that. From the center goes forth the radius, meeting the periphery. And I'm going to abstract that like that. And that's our letter T. T is simply an abstract drawing of a line radiant from a center meeting a periphery. Now, where the two meet, there is an interface. And we're going to talk in relation to beauty, trickery, suffering, and affirmation that leads to beauty in terms of interfaces. The original infinite field as positive of the dot is called originator. Originator means or, goal, heraldically, the will, Closing the dot, the I, consolidating it, G, packing that really down to an inner individual body, I, continuously, N, N is the glyph of continuity, and the Egyptian will tell you it's water, the symbol of continuous flow, and Tor, the law. The originator of that dot is the infinite field, and there is an interface. Now we're going to put other little signs to show that when we posit the dot, we give ourselves the possibility of a very complex universe, like we did when we made the two triangles. The dot, we'll put KTR on that. That's its symbol phonetically. A lock, crossing place, differentiating. Differentiating because when an active force hits a passive, it vibrates on that point and differentiates both the passive and the active. When somebody's modelling clay to make a pot, they model the clay, but they model themselves by the feedback from the clay to the hand and the eye. So both the active and the passive are modified by the mutual encounter in the interface of both. So we'll now say KTR there, and that is the dot. And then we push through the dot and make the dot move and draw a line. And by the line we'll put Z for Zoe. Life. Zodiac. Life way. Now when that line moves, that's the sign of the primordial driving power called phallus, which means rational play. Phallus means play. Phallus means reason, philo. Remember that this glyph, like that, means analyze your being, divide your circle. First letter of philosophy in the Greek. That means analytical power. And that analytical power is symbolized as a straight line. Now that straight line is pushing through an infinite field of sentient power, and in the process it warps it. All you followers of Star Trek know about time warps, don't you? So I'm going to draw over here a warp like this. And that force has hit it, like that. The travelling line, which is nothing but the point repeated, has hit the field and created a receptive warp. And I'm going to write for that travelling line the letter I, and I'm going to write for this warp U. And then I'm going to put the two together in a special glyph, the recipient and the donor. The whole universe, everywhere, at every level, in all cases, throughout all time and all space, is nothing but activated powers warping recipient sentient power wrapping around it. And this warp bit is this dot prior to its condensation. So we call this one the drawing board. And remember that a sphere, which is what that dot is, if we spin it rapidly, it becomes a disc, like that. That's our original drawing board, a flattened disc. Think of the solar system flattened, and think of the galactical energies from outside the solar system driving and hitting the plane of the solar system and producing changes in the weather on the planets. That actually happened. That forces from outer galaxies hit the solar system and warp it and make it vibrate and produce the phenomena that we call the perceptual world. So we have a drawing board there and a pen there. That pen is the phallic pen. Do not confuse phallus with physical organ suspended on ordinary males on Earth. The penile weapon is not the phallus. Phallus means a power that reasons when it's travelling, and its reason is perfect, logic, cosmic logic, logo logic. It's not at the mercy of anything. not at the mercy of the stimulus. It is itself the stimulator. When the male organ responds to external stimulus, it proves that it is not the phallus. When the owner of the same has perfect self-control and can either use it or not use it at will, then that power is the phallus. That true phallic power. Now, when this relation together produces the universe, it does so because, as you can see, there's an interface. I'm sure that's a bit loud, do you like this? Now, this is the propelling force, and this is the recipient force, and between the two is a zone of interaction, like that. Now, what we call consciousness of the objective world is nothing but the double function of the interspace between the activating and receptive fields. So the interface is the means whereby we become conscious. Now, if we don't have an interface in that manner, we cannot be conscious. If we start to drowse, we lose awareness of the interface, we fall asleep, we will go into a deep sleep, dreamless, and we will know nothing. And that nothing is like it was before the universe was constructed. Now you see, we have above the tree of life three words. Now this word at the top means an eye, so I will draw an eye there. It also means to negate, because it represents the observer. The eye sees not itself but by reflection. That is Ein. That letter has been reduced from the Egyptian drawing of an eye, like that, to a letter like that. All they've done is taken the corner of the eye, like that, and the sign underneath, which is like that. That is the Hebrew version of that Egyptian eye. And it is Ein, and it's got an attack. Ein. There's an attack on it. A glottal attack. It means absolute positivity. And the Y means affirm, and the N means negate. It means absolute yes-no observer. Absolute yes-no observer. The observing awareness is only observing when it posits for itself a dot, which is a sphere condensed. If it doesn't make that sphere, it hasn't got an object. If it hasn't got an object, it is not an observer. But when it posits it, it has to affirm a negation. Is not the dot a negation of infinity? In positing the dot, has not the infinite sentient power that we call the Godhead, has not that power, by positing that dot, finited, limited a zone in itself? And it has affirmed it, said yes to no. So that word, translated as the nothingness, the beyondness of all phenomena, is the observing awareness that posits negations. And the negations are the world of phenomena that we know. All the forms that we see are negations of infinity. And the negations are forms other than the one they posit. A square is not a triangle. A triangle is not a hexagon. Every time you posit a specific form, you negate an infinity of other forms that you could have posited. So you have to say absolutely yes to no. Now that's three letters. And here are another three, the PH, really, is that. It's one letter. Now, Soph means wisdom. Sophia means affirmation of wisdom. And that is the reverse of Phos. Phos is light. Light is consciousness. Light is the symbol of awareness, of sentience, of knowingness. And the false is reversed, because that self is going to go right back to the observer and say to it, I know that I know. Remember how the anthropologist put it? There is Homo sapiens, a fellow's fairly wise, knowing, but later, perhaps after 3 million years of evolution, we come up to a point about 40,000, 50,000 years ago, Homo sapiens, sapiens, two sapiens. That means he who knows that he knows. The early men shambled about, knowing carrots and turnips and peaches and edibles and inedibles, and they were identified with their object. And at a certain critical time, between 40 and 50,000 years ago, a man suddenly said, instead of thinking about the external objective world, I'm going to think about thinking, about the nature of thought. And he received the name Homo sapiens sapiens. He who knows that he knows. And there's a tremendous leap forward in human evolution. The moment a man, instead of thinking about the external world, suddenly thought about knowing that he knew, thinking about thinking, thinking about how, thinking about the mysterious power that could actually posit a universe, and know that the universe is posited by this sapience, this knowing power, this wisdom. That self is the same thing as that self, and it is there, reflective. So the original I, the observing I, turns back on itself to remind itself not to get lost. When you do this, we call this the act of resec, reflexive self-consciousness. You say, not only I see you, but I see that I am seeing you. And I am reminding me that I am seeing. That's reflexive. That's diagrammed in that way. Ein posits self. Self returns to Ein. The observer posits its own wisdom and then returns the wisdom to the observer. Now, if you did that and nothing more, there would be no separated world as we know it, because there would be an absolute identity between the observer and the known or wisdom observed by the observer. So we take the same false light and we write another word, a synonym here, also meaning light. And now this light has been split. That's the whole light of the observer observing himself. And now he comes out. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. When the false or light turns over and splits into 7 modalities, which are the colours of the rainbow, it has made a light that will radiate from the centre, and that light will enlighten, by analysis, all created beings. Now, all those, we've got 3, 3, and 3, making 9, are vested in the 10th, posited as that prime point, which we said was KTR, was a locked turning place, a point of the assembly of the 7 rays of the orbs. And we have inside us 7 deadly sins, 7 corresponding virtues, 7 powers, 7 colours. The word colour means gullital differentiation, appetites, separated into 7 types. And they are posited in that dot. But that dot is a location. It's not got 3 dimensions. It's got location and no dimension. We want to get it into 3 dimensions in a human body, so we have to push the dot to make the line, and push the line to make a drawing board, and then push through the drawing board by projective geometry and make for ourselves a three-dimensional object called the ashlar or cube. 1, 2, 3, 4. The fourth one is the first three-dimensional tangible God, a God that can be worshipped. It's a three-dimensional object, and its name there is Mercy. You know how people popularly say, oh, it's a mercy I've got a car on a rainy day. Whatever is three-dimensionally existently available for use is a mercy. Prior to that three-dimensionality, there are only abstractions. A plane with length and width, no depth. A line with length, not even a plane. And a dot, merely a location. Abstraction, a mere abstraction, which by precipitation becomes three-dimensional reality. Now at each point there is an interface. And it's in the interface and nowhere else that consciousness exists. You can't be conscious unless you project a resistance and then bounce on and come back. So again, let's examine the interface rather more carefully. We have physiologically an interface in the retina. We'll have an eye there. And there's the retina, and there's the lens on the eye. There is an object outside, and the light shining on the object, bouncing into the eye, hitting the retina. Now behind the retina is a nerve going to an ocular center in the back of the head, and a store of memories of previous things, and the feedback to the retina like that. Now the retina is the interface between the outer world and the inner world. And you have another interface in the eardrum, where sounds hit you from outside, are received by the brain inside, and interpreted by the mind. That's not the brain. The mind is much finer than the physical brain, and has made the brain as a recording device. And that simple diagram on the retina, the interface there can be repeated in the eardrum, and when you put your finger and thumb together like that and feel it, you can, by a simple self-demonstration, show by focusing consciousness in the thumb you can feel your finger. By focusing consciousness in the finger you can feel your thumb. The interface between the finger and the thumb is the zone of consciousness of touch. The interface on the eardrum is the zone of consciousness of sound. The interface on the retina is the interface of sight, colour, light, dark. And you have interfaces all over the body. Wherever there's a cell in the body, surrounded by other cells, there is an interface. Wherever the interfaces are, there is consciousness. Now, it is the will to posit the original dot, the Hebrew word is Yod, Y-O-D. That is a place on which you can bounce and return to yourself, like the Ayin observer bounce from the self wisdom of itself back to itself in a reflexive act. Now, in the reflexive act, you discover that what you thought was the external world was really a projection of your own intention. Nothing but. There is no objectivity in the world as the naive mind thinks there is. There is nothing in the world but the deliberate projections of sentient power field into itself to provide itself with a world to observe. The sentient power has made the world, and we make our world, and we interpret what we make. And when other people interpret what we make in a way that we don't like, we call it disagreement. And when we project and somebody else sees what we projected and describes it in the same words we do, we say intelligent person. Our concept of the intelligence of other beings is nothing but our realization that this being agrees with us and therefore must be intelligent. Whereas the stupid are those who can't see what we mean. We are all projecting a world, and insofar as we conspire to agree in the nature of the world, there is a common world. But insofar as we disagree about the nature of the world, there is no common world. We're all projecting our own universes. And our disagreements and our agreements are the product of nothing except the coincidence of our wills or their non-coincidence. How do we feel about this? You sit there and realize now that the very body in which you sit and in which you tend to say I and think of the body, but think more carefully, I means the observing consciousness of the body in the body, and think that everybody else in this room is a projection of the consciousness of each one of us. Now how does it feel to feel there's nobody here really, except our intention that there be people here? Do you like it? Do you like it?
Yes.
Well, how does contingent relationships, like for instance, if I ask a news person to make a strike,
should I send Peter Lamont to you?
Where is that strike?
Where is it? On the interface. You have willed out to a limit called skin surface. Another person has willed out to skin surface. You then bring together two skin surfaces, and that's called contingent relationship. You're willing so far and making an integument, a binding surface, because you don't will to infinity. You will to make of yourself a zone to be recognized as a being. There's your contingency, and there is your possibility of a fall, because if you identify with the periphery of your contingency and become attached to the opinion of another person about you, you've left the center of your creativity, and you have forgotten that you are an observing, intelligent, sentient power creating your universe. The universe that Arthur Scargill was trying to project and McGregor was trying to project, they met and their interfaces came to no agreement, did they? Sort of stalemate. But weren't they both projecting and trying to influence each other and creating the interface and determined to impose on each other and not to give in and to try to discredit each other and undermine each other's morale by insults, saying funny things to a reporter who says, is Scargill physically not well? No. Is he mentally not well? No, he's not that either. And they sling rude remarks at each other to undermine morale, because if they undermine morale, they weaken the will. If the will weakens, the projection falls back onto itself. And if it gets very negative, it falls right onto centre, and the person dies as to the external world, leaving a little carcass there, which the other fellow decently buries, and retires back into the field that projected it. There's a process called synesthesia, which babies experience quite a lot. And as a child, you have to learn not to do it, because it's a bit of a nuisance. When I was a kiddie, when my mother spoke, light used to come out of her mouth. Many, many children have that. That's called synesthesia. Adults don't like it. Supposing somebody was being polite to you but feeling very horrible to you. And they make a kind of nice, hopeful, delicate green spring colour. Yes, and they speak and out comes filthy dark brown red. Would you like it? Did any of you see a film called The Exorcist? Did you? Well, a little girl produces piles of plastic like... And that's what would happen, total synesthesia. Unless you were 100% sincere, you would expose yourself, wouldn't you? You'd be thinking dirty thoughts and saying nice things. The words wouldn't match the colours, would they? Huh?
No.
Synesthesia.
Yeah.
You know how to spell aesthesia? Don't you know how to spell aesthetic?
Yes.
Well, it's like that. On you got an IA on the end. S-Y-N. You want it American or English? A-E. Yes? S-T-H-I-A. Yes, is that right? No, it's not. We missed out on E and an S. Oh, did we? Can we post this on you? In the trick?
Can it be spelled?
Oh yes, it's in the dictionary.
How is it spelled?
S-Y-N.
S-Y-N?
Yes.
Yes.
Do you want it with an E or with an A?
A.
A-E-S-T-H-E-S. I-A. Is that right?
Does that mean the power of seeing sound
is correct? Synesthesia. No, it means that all your five senses can actually, in the fields in the brain, interfere with each other. So if I look at that light and then pass it from my ocular centre to my audio centre, I'll hear it. It's quite common. And if I pass it to a centre at the root of the nose, I'll smell it. Yes? And if I go like that with my fingertips, I can feel it like a tangible contact. And I can taste it.
And this is quite well known.
Oh, yes, yes, very well known. It's quite common in children, and you have to get rid of it very soon. If you don't, you'll betray yourself. You show a pile of muddy colours. When you're saying something nice, it would be no good having the gift of the gab or the blarney stone if every time you said something nice, something horrible came out. Now, I knew a fellow who fell down and had to go to hospital because he suddenly fell into synesthesia. And he was talking to his wife one day, and when she opened her mouth, frogs came out. Frogs. They were jumping out of her mouth like this, and he hallucinated. That's what the psychiatrist said. You have hallucinated. He hadn't seen frogs. You know the frogs? And do you know what the frogs meant? They were psychological precipitates of vaulting ambitions. His wife wanted a new car, new house, new carpet, new mink coat, new this, new this, new this. And he suddenly saw these frogs. And he wasn't used to frogs. I'm used to them, but he wasn't. So he had to go in the hospital till the frogs stopped. Pink elephants. Well, you know the word elephant means appearance of God. Yes, hello, that's God. And the fan part, fanning, to appear. Elephant means appearance of God. That's an ordinary small human being meeting an elephant for the first time, not knowing whether that thing was the tail or the trunk. Like old Chinese proverb. Elephant very big like God, can't tell whether he goes forward or backwards. So when you suddenly met an elephant, a big one, and you're a little man, the size of a Dravidian friend of mine, he's 4'9". And suddenly meets this appearance of God. And he makes a lovely noise, like Torah, down the nose. And the nose goes, like that. How does he feel? Well, he feels pink. Why pink? Well, he's not big enough to be angry.
Is that
Yeah, two. You know what the right, how they sing the red flag, don't you? The people's flag is deepest pink, it's not so red as people think, is it? Because in fact they'd love to get angry and throw out Mrs. Thatcher, physically. In fact, throw anybody out and gets in the way. But when they think about the comeback and the charges of cavalry and the plastic bullets in the eyeball, the red pales, and they only go pink. They don't go red. A well-read man has more courage than an ignorant man. He's got more principles to fall back on. The interface. To another. Right. It is actually what? Well, I'll draw you an interface. Are you ready? You like it? Do you know what those two beings are trying to do, really? It began with two pre-sexual monocells like that. There's the interface. That one is a bit smaller than that one, isn't it? So it's envious. So it tries to bite a bit. So it goes like this. And sucks. Yeah, it sucks by expanding its body that way, yes? And a bit of this one goes in like that. And because they're doing their own interpretations, the sucker thinks he's winning, and the one that sucked thinks he's very proud of his performance. Yeah? Do you like it? Now, there is no duality, non-duality, Advaita. There is no duality because it's all an infinite field of sentient power. But you know, if you want to kiss somebody, you really want to smell if they're worth eating. You know that? Have you ever thought of that? Well, haven't you, in relation to your little boy at some time, said I could eat him? And then you've hoped that nobody was taking you seriously. But you know, they're a very good source of protein. But I'll tell you this, if you eat all the babies you have, do you know what will happen? You won't have anybody to look after you in your old age. You know that's true. And any world sociologist can tell you that in all the countries where there's the least food, there's a very high birth rate and a very high mortality rate of the children. So the parents won't have a lot of children because a lot of them are going to die. And who's going to look after them in their old age? So you wouldn't think an ordinary kiss. You know, kiss is a Greek word for that. The interface when two spheres meet. It actually phonetically says chaos. It says kiss. Yeah? Germans don't kiss precisely. Germans don't kiss like this. They don't kiss like that, do you? So kissen is a cushion. Well, to kiss is a kuss. So to be a proper German, you kiss like this. You're just finding out whether the other being is edible. I'm not joking. Do you believe it?
No. Well, yes, I do.
It's terrible. You say an elementary biological truth that's self-evident, and somebody says, I don't believe it. How can you not believe it? No, really, you do believe it, but you don't want to admit it. And it makes you ungovernable. The next person you kiss, you're going, Is it edible or not edible? And they'd say, don't you dare find out if I'm edible.
But I remember this on New Year's Eve.
Good, good. You find that very often that a woman's chief weapon at a big party is to get the flu beforehand and then go around and give it to everybody. Isn't it? Make all the unfit retire to leave the space open. Do you know one of the funniest things about nurses when they go to hospitals as beginners? They arrive there with different menstruation periods, and in a very, very short space of time, they're all menstruating together. Can you guess why? They all want to know when pregnancy time is. They've got their eye on that young doctor in his innocence. And we must have a fair start, mustn't we? Do you believe that? There's an old saying, you can't give it away. It's true. The whole thing about law, cosmic law, Torah, Rota, is this, that you're dealing with nothing whatever. It's a sentient power projecting a universe through you. First projecting you as a point of investigation and positing, and then through you projecting a universe. Uniquely, your version.
But are you saying that we're all wanting really to eat each other?
Of course, of course. If you're edible. I mean, big firms do it on little firms. Don't they? It's true in the business world, isn't it? And if it's true in the business world, it must be true in the monkey business world. In other words, cosmos.
But surely, at the physical level, a lot in historical terms, with cannibalism, etc., people have eaten each other and found it.
Very good.
As you were saying. Yeah, and then...
But it makes them nervous about you. After you've eaten a few, they go on guard.
Historically, then, ancestrally, we've all been cannibals.
Oh, yes,
we've
definitely.
We've all eaten each other many times.
Oh, yes, yeah.
So we're now eating each other...
Surreptitiously.
...slightly more refined level.
Surreptitiously.
Yeah.
You call it slightly more refined.
I'm not saying I prefer it, but...
Aren't there certain euphemisms amongst men called going for a nibble?
Yeah. Did you say a nipple?
No, I'm talking about fundamental cosmic fact. Whatever is true cosmically is true biologically for individuals.
Yes. Well, just taking it through the stages.
What? Naive cannibalism to refined cannibalism.
Of eating each other at the various levels of, you like, interface possibilities.
Yes, like stealing money from an unwary client.
Then through indigestion.
Oh, yes.
Through eventual indigestion.
Yeah.
Through individuation.
Well, if you practice very hard, eventually you don't have indigestion.
So you are holistically in all and all and all, etc.
That's all. Even if they're not.
Even if they're not, you're in.
That's right. And that's the whole meaning of that horrible thing that offended the disciples of Christ. When he said, if you don't eat my body and drink my blood, you have no part in me. And many were offended and left him. Because he was recommending primitive cannibalism, about which all the authorities knew. A plane crashes in South America and there's nothing to eat, so they eat each other. Yeah? It's not bad. Providing the person you eat is not too bad. Not indigestible. Not too stupid. You don't want to eat the brains of a stupid person, do you?
No.
But in the old days, if you fought a hero, a great fighting fellow, intelligent, and managed to kill him, you get them up. And if you had their people that helped you, you let them have the toenails while you ate the brains. It's true. When they fought, they ate each other. You know the expression, guts for garters? It's true. in Indian history and elsewhere, when you defeated a person, you ripped his tum up, pulled his guts out, went like this, and tied him around the girl's leg for a decoration. And she was very proud. But the fastidious said, "Why don't you wash him first already?" Really fine. So we don't call it eating when you send a fellow a bill that's excessive, do you? In the hope that he's stupid enough to pay it. Isn't that eating?
Yeah.
It is. Hmm?
Yeah.
It's merely more subtle. But is it more moral?
No.
Yes, it is.
Is it?
Yeah, because the rules of morality are be more subtle. That's what being moral means. Be so subtle nobody knows you're doing it.
That's not morality.
Yes, it is. That's what morality means. Morality means keep up the walls, the murals. Ethics is a bit more refined. Ethos, theos. It's the way God behaves. You know what God does?
So subtlety is not ethical.
Oh, it's very ethical. No man has seen God at any time. Ethos, theos are the same word, God. You haven't seen God, but do you know that God is eating you?
Yes.
Do you know that you're working for God and don't know it?
Yes.
Do you know that if you cheat somebody, you're working for God? To wake that stupid person up that's so dim they can be cheated?
Yes, tonight, yes.
There's nobody not working for God. Sorrow must come. Woe to him by whom? There's no such thing as an existential being that's a non-eater. Do you cry when you swallow a sandwich full of bacteria? When you have a cheese sandwich, shelf life what? It's full of bacteria. And you swallow it. You're interested in the cheese, not the bacteria. And you go, and squirt hydrochloric acid in their faces, don't you? Don't you cry every time you eat? Haven't you noticed a tendency for fluid to appear in your eyes and nose when you eat? Do you know that's a very ancient unconscious recognition? You know, the walrus, the carpenter, the oysters. Let's invite the oysters to tea. They're the tea, aren't they? True or not? True, but very uncomfortable. Unless you have the mentality of a realist, non-sentimental. Very good. Yeah. The W-A-L, which is Norse for whale, is Leviathan, and means the state. The Rus is a form of Ruach, spirit. So you have the law of the outer world, Wal, and the law of the inner world, Rus. So the walrus is both this world and the next, the inner world and the outer world. And we are the oysters. Now, if you're a clever oyster, you know how to avoid being digested. Now, you swallow it whole, acquiescing in it, and setting up antibodies against the digester. Yeah? When you do that, God says, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." Because he likes individuality. That's why Jacob fought God. Doesn't it say that in the Bible? And one, he fought him all night. God kicked him in the thigh and dislocated it for him. But that was only a mnemonic to remind him.
So Christ lets everybody, so Christ sets up his own crucifixion.
Oh, definitely, yes.
So as to be equal.
Yes, he goes around and not
everybody else indigestion.
No, some people like it.
Yes, no, but the idea is to infiltrate.
Well, definitely. No escape from that crucifixion now.
I
don't care what nationality person is. What religion there is, it makes no difference. He made a historical mark, that very tough Jewish boy, by getting crucified after annoying the establishment. So we can't get rid of it. I mean, Jews write books about Jesus. Yeah? They do, you know. It's an inferior, badly educated Jew that would say, I don't believe he ever existed. He was a controversial figure with a terrible capacity for annoying the establishment. And then having built up a big enough audience to get crucified, and then leave the figure of the crucified man in the mind of the human race forever. No escape. It doesn't matter whether you're nominally a Christian. You could be nominally, titularly a Christian, and not a Christian at all. Or you could be nominally a Muslim, or a Jew, or a Hindu. But if you believe that to be existent is to be crucified, you're already a Christian. Because the Chris is the cross.
And in the moment of being eaten, you in fact self-realize.
Yes, of course. And if you allow yourself to be eaten by anyone consciously, you survive.
So take the analogy of drowning.
Mm-hmm.
If you are in when you are in that predicament of drowning, then total acceptance of it would in fact see you through it in the sense of
yes, I once drowned.
In the sense of a realization of what it would be of benefit to it.
Yes, I once drowned, and I've known 5 other people that have drowned and had artificial respiration. They all had one thing in common. Great annoyance with the resuscitating man. Go away, I'm okay. There's a certain critical point when you know that you've had it. And at that moment, the whole time sequence of thought processes changes. Everything slows down, everything goes very, very calm. And then if somebody starts pumping to bring you back, you get very annoyed. You say, leave me alone, I'm fine, thank you. No, we're resuscitating him. No, you're not, you're rotten, so-and-so. You're bringing me back into this miserable, externalized, peripheral, horrible, excremental world. That's the experience. Two, there is no death. Identification with the finite is the only death there is.
So in the process of drowning, you've got more time to actually assess yourself.
Oh, yes. Yes.
As opposed to being hit by a car at 100 miles an hour.
Yes, that's right. You know how lovely it is. Do you ever have a mad time when you decide to listen to the TV or something on a weekend and you hear everything, one after the other, beginning with songs of praise? At a certain critical point, you turn it off.
Yes.
And the three-dimensionality of peace descends on you.
Well, they were doing it tonight.
Oh, yes. Peace is a lovely thing, you can get
but
it.
But interestingly enough, you can listen to music, can't you?
Not forever.
No, then you can, and the record comes to an end.
Luckily.
Yeah,
even Mozart comes to an end.
If you're listening to something of that nature, you can actually find that when it comes to an end, that it feels as though there is something missing. In a way, it is a different stimulus, isn't it, to
the sounds. The silence is not nothing, it's balanced energy which feeds you. And if you've been annoying yourself with Stimmung, if you get a very good up-to-date modern composer and you play that record to get the money out of it, how much did it cost you? You won't play it once, will you? If you paid £20 for something, you're going to get £20 worth of listening on you. And suddenly you think, how horribly empty this is. What a feeble attempt. It's supposed to be a great new movement, a new start of the musical world. and you get your £20 worth of value out of it, and it gets progressively emptier and emptier. Yeah.
But there are certain plastics that have the opposite effect, don't they? That they can actually.
Only two particular people. Who are your favourites?
Well, it's like Beethoven and Mozart. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is certain of their music that there is no doubt when it's on,
mm-hmm.
There is something fulfilling it. And when it stops, it's like a hunger to put it on again. I'm not saying because it's repeated and repeated and repeated,
mm-hmm.
but there is something fulfilling about that resonance.
Only because you've not had enough yet. And what you don't recognise is that inside your skin there is a world which is you. And the external music stimulates
that which you're trying to get at.
In you. And makes you aware of something about you that you want to know.
Yeah.
And that you call satisfaction with the music. You're not. You're satisfied with you. And attributes it to the music. And you say, Beethoven's a great guy. How do I know? Because I'm a great guy. Did I not respond to it? Isn't that the essence of musical snobbery? That I feel great when I listen to those quartets. I can assimilate them. They annoy other lesser mortals. Would you like some Strauss waltzes playing to you? No, if you were condemned to listen to the same piece of music forever, what would it be? Desert Island Disc, what would you take with you? Desert Island Disc. You're allowed one record, what do you take?
I wouldn't take one.
You've got to take one, Desert Island Disc. You are the desert island. You've got a record playing in you. And the record that you're playing was invented by you. It's your composition.
Well, I'll take that then.
You can't not. Now that's a good point to finish. You can't not get away from yourself. Can you?
No.
Does that mean you can or you can't?
You can't.
You can't not. That's the devil negative.
Yeah.
You can't not. You can get away from yourself. How do you do it? The way you do it is you remember that you've posited it and stop positing it. The mind then goes void, you're nothing at all. Right before the dot was put down. How do you feel when you've got nothing in your mind? Or better still, how do you feel in the midst of a deep, dreamless sleep, undisturbed by anything? Huh? You like it?
Not aware of it.
But you must be aware of it.
But it's
basic yoga. It's basic yoga, because if you did not have an awareness of it, you wouldn't be able to say, I slept well. And you know when you slept well, don't you?
I would say I feel very, very good when I've had a really deep,
really deep dreamless
sleep.
Do you know that's the same as the Buddhist Nirvana that everybody chases? A totally void mind in which, after playing all the great works of the universe, you don't play. And you're aware that you are resting.
That release from time.
Total. And it says, and there will be time no more. Stop the damn thing turning. Turn off the record. And dwell in your own being.
Is that then beauty being you to you?
Right.
So that is reflexive self-consciousness.
Right.
There isn't consciousness. There is actually beauty.
No, there must be an awareness there, otherwise you couldn't say, I slept well.
Well, there is sentience there.
There's not an objective consciousness. But there is a pure subjective self-awareness. Yeah? And that's the highest conceivable state. From it you precipitated a world. From it you can precipitate any number of worlds. and in it you can escape the worlds that you have projected, and then come back and make more.
Is that deep dreamless sleep God trying to create?
N-I-R-B-A-N-A. That's translating bliss, but it doesn't mean bliss. It means no wind.
No what?
No wind. See? Nothing is blowing. You're suspended in infinite self-being, without an object to annoy you. You're having a rest. It's a lovely feeling.